Hey, everybody. Welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast number 32. It's 3 days before, or 4 days before Christmas, and things have been a little crazy at the store, but in a good way. I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics, and let me introduce the cast around the table here.
Adam Russell.
Joe F.
Matt Lytle.
Jeremy Dan.
And calling in from Cleveland.
At Nick Borelli.
And calling in from San Francisco.
From high above Left Coast Love Towers. And I don't know, why do you guys, I feel like I'm sitting in the corner. I get to look at a pile of boxes.
Sorry.
Sean Wheatley, a.k.a. Left Coast Love from San Francisco.
Okay, we're getting not international. Like, Cleveland's kind of international.
Well, I thought he was, it was a nice national juxtaposition to Nick being down in the Batcave. I'm high above at the top of the
there you go.
Broadcast center.
So you do the night with the Dick Grayson version of Batman.
70s.
Or the
Marshall
Green Arrow from Smallville. How about that?
Oh, fair enough. Oh, Sean looks confused. Well, I'll look at both of you. This would be cool. I'm like in the command center. Here we go.
That is you.
Okay, first thing I want to talk about, X-Sanction came out last week, and it was the big talk of the interwebs.
It's almost here.
It is. It's coming.
Wait, I thought it came.
It's not coming early. but it's coming soon.
That's what she said.
But... Yeah, but it's funny because I sold out in one day on it only because I originally ordered it as a cable miniseries because that's how it was presented. I think the original ads were Cable Reborn by Loeb and McGinnis. So it came out, and of course, right after the orders were filled, they magically announced that, oh, yeah, actually, that we have this big Avengers versus X-Men story coming out, and it's actually starting here, which was great when you couldn't get any more because they already announced a sellout. I think the Monday before. So, those who read it, what did you guys think?
I didn't really get into it. I mean, it didn't really have that much that was really being told there. It was just more, I don't know, a lot of setup, I guess. I don't know. It's pretty bland, I thought.
I was hoping for a big surprise, you know, with the Punisher losing his eye in recent series. I was hoping for a reveal like Cable's actually the Punisher. But there's a lot of throwbacks to the 90s series. So that was cool. I like nostalgia.
See, that's where I had a problem with it was I never really read it in the 90s. So all of a sudden when they referred, you know, they brought in Blacksmith, the only thing I really ever knew of Blacksmith was a cover that I remember seeing on a book I priced, where he was carrying, you know, it was like Death of Blacksmith or something like that. So I recognized the name, I recognized the face of the character, but there was no meaning to me. And they didn't really set it up. They didn't explain who he was at all in it, other than he was somebody Cable knew and apparently trusted.
I like Cable more as a loner, you know? I like him as a...
Well, I really enjoyed the story with Hope in the future. I enjoyed that whole run.
Definitely.
But so I didn't understand that, and the motivation of him seems completely off as well.
I don't think you know the motivation.
No, but he's coming into the past and he's going to kill all the Avengers for no other than because the guy said you already know who's to blame. I don't know if he'd come back and do something like that.
That said, I read every issue of every comic that Bishop had ever been in.
Okay, yeah.
And when they made him switch over without knowing why initially, it seemed completely ridiculous, not a character. And then the Cable book sort of introduced his motivation and where he came from and how terrible it was. And all of a sudden, it started making sense for the character. So I think this may be one of those instances where they're shocking you with Cable would never do that, and then slowly introducing a world where, yeah, that makes sense under those circumstances.
Yeah, it feels
although
very
it's Jeff
much like
so,
a...
probably not.
It feels like very much like a dystopian future Cable coming back to try to prevent where he's at now.
I was genuinely torn on this comic because I've always had a soft spot for Cable as a character. I actually enjoyed him in the X-Factor or the X-Force. The X-Force era. But I also... The stuff they've done with him in the last 10 years, I really enjoy. Like, he's actually grown as a character. But reading this comic read exactly like every other Jeff Loeb Cable comic. which was great back in the day, and it was an enjoyable, but it's like, it's back to the Cable with an agenda to save the future, and he'd almost kind of grown beyond that. So with everything that it has happened to the character since, it feels like a massive, like, going backwards. So I wasn't... It was one of those, I love seeing characters grow and develop, so I'm kind of torn between the nostalgia of it and the disappointment of kind of feeling that a lot of the character development that he's gone through in the last 10 years has kind of been tossed aside.
So. Okay, Sean, you had a comment?
No, just a happy chortle.
What, guy can't like Cable?
No, that's why. Hey, you know me, I'm Mr. Positive. I love anybody that loves comics. Just because like it's Cable, not my I cup like of tea Pearl doesn't Jam. Mean I like it can't be someone else's, but, you know, to each his own.
Up or down.
Although, Cable with the baby carrier on the front of his chest was one of my favorite pieces of Marvel art of all time.
That's a good place to...
The scimitar, you guys remember that?
Yes, from the... towards the end of the Cable run.
Yeah. It's also a awesome weapon in Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
Good to know.
Yeah, but they... did you see that there's projected covers of Cable coming up, a variety of variants, and one of them has him... completely techno-organic virused out to the point where he looks like Colossus.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that. I saw the one where he was shooting past Iron Man or something. It was a very odd way they had their arms missing each other.
Yeah, that's the next issue. That's the regular cover.
Okay.
There's a bunch of variants in one of them.
The regular cover until they switch at the last minute like they did with the last one.
Well, I mean, just thinking that it was... You're absolutely right that it was originally billed as Cable Reborn. Imagine that title... under the auspices of what we actually received here, it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they changed what they were doing or what, but as I called a couple weeks ago, the reason that they even promoted Avengers versus X-Men so early, it seemed, it was to promote this book.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Retailers, they did it fine for people buying books, so maybe they have a second print coming up soon.
Oh, they do. It's next week already.
Yeah, so there you go. That's what they were doing.
Well, yeah, they did it in such a way that it makes you look like the bad guy.
Yeah, because I sold out.
Why didn't you know, you knew this was going to be Avengers versus X-Men, Colin. Why didn't you order more of this?
No, I didn't.
Part of the problem is people like Bleeding Cool, right? They could tell retailers if they keep their mouth shut. But you have people that run the Bleeding Cool and tell them as soon as you hear anything. And those people ruin it.
Oh, I'm not saying
no,
that it's
No, I agree
wrong.
Completely.
Like, but if those people keep their mouth shut, then the Marvel could tell the retailers and say, order this like this, because this is what's coming. Although you got burnt on, what was the one that they sold you, like Death of Captain America, but was really a lame book?
Are you talking about the Dracula?
Maybe the Dracula, the vampire book?
Well, there was that, and there was another one, too. I don't remember what it was.
Death of Sue Storm. They kind of promoted it as Death of Sue Storm.
But it wasn't an alternate reality
of Sue Storm.
It's a problem the industry has created, or, you know, the retail side of the industry has created.
For themselves.
But it is funny, like, the way it kind of spins.
It's the vocal minority that's screwing the majority.
Yeah. That's like, there was a post on the Beat last week about digital comics, and one of the things was, you know, the retailers were up in arms and boycotting Dark Horse and everything. I'm like, and I responded back, I'm like, you know, one guy on the internet said that, and you take, you know, Larry for all comic retailers, and, you know,
which is why he does what he does.
Right, but it's, you know, don't lump everybody in with the one guy who's shouting the loudest. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the new 52 was horrible because there was no women in it, right?
Well, that's true. That's true. That's true. No women creators, yeah. And oh, they lost their one. They lost Gail. No, they...
Well, she's still doing Batgirl.
I know.
One girl in a Batgirl suit at a con.
Yeah, everything goes to heck.
So, pretty underwhelming intro issue. Is that what everyone pretty much agrees?
Yes.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I mean...
It was fun, but I just don't know what it was. That's all.
I don't have the background either, so I didn't Cable in the 90s.
I will say,
I just liked it.
One positive thing I will say about it is that, at least in some way, as a prelude mini, it seems to be setting up what the mini is supposed to be.
Don't call it Prelude with the X-Men involved, because that brings back Prelude.
That's exactly
prelude,
what I'm referencing,
Prelude
though.
To Schism.
Prelude to Schism, we all read, and we're like, what did I just read? At least with this, it's like, okay. Cable is pointing a gun at Captain America. I can kind of see how this could
tie
in.
When I read Prelude to Schism, we didn't know what was going on with Schism, and that was
the writer didn't know what was going on.
That was
Schism.
A great miniseries
until you read
Schism. Until you read Schism, and you're like, when the hell did that take place?
I agree.
You're like,
I still.
Here's
mean.
A fanboy question. Cable, it looks like, you know, later in his life, you know, he seems like he's. I mean, I don't know. In the story context, he's got to be like 80, but he. This is certainly not him at his physical peak. He takes Captain America pretty quick.
Yeah.
Do you guys agree with that?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, let me throw this idea out there. Is there anything in the story that I missed that would have suggested that this Cable is like the 90s Cable coming forward in time? He'll do everything he's doing here, and then he'll go back and continue his run in the 90s?
It's certainly possible. I wouldn't... I mean...
Oh, man.
When you get into time travel, man, it's all
it's
off.
No, it's definitely our the right after his supposed death,
right?
Because he says, "Pain, mind numbing, have to focus. Think of her. Think of hope."
Okay.
So, yeah, because it's all about hope. Yeah,
that's right. He does talk about her.
Mm. So yeah, I got the feeling right after his supposed death.
I got the feeling from this that the X-Men or the Avengers do something to hope in the future.
Oh, probably.
Like, that's what I think this is going, is that...
Well, I think they're trying to pull us, like, what they did with Scarlet Witch. They're trying to kill her.
Yeah.
Or maybe the Scarlet... Well, no, because she's both. I don't know.
Well, Phoenix, put it this way. You have hope here, and there's a giant Phoenix comet headed towards Earth.
Well, my problem, I guess, with all that is hope hasn't exactly been successful or interesting. No, and I don't know if they've really...
She's been interesting not in her own book. Like, she plays a good role in Uncanny, but her book's kind of lame.
Yeah, so I just... You know, it's like they're banking everything on this big emotional thing with Hope, and I'm like, we still don't know who she is. We don't know who her parents are. We don't know anything about her after all this time. It's been at least a couple of years
now. It's Jean Grey.
Because that Cable... Well, that Cable thing went on 2 years when she was running around in the future.
I think it's been suggested she's Jean Grey reincarnated.
I think the problem is not with... Hope's book is not Hope. It's the rest of the lights. They are dull.
Yeah, they're dull. It is Jen Hope. It is about her team.
They are dull and uninteresting.
Well, somebody said here last week that she's a Scarlet Witch manifestation like her kids.
That was that thing I said. I had my whole somebody theory here said of the that, whole thing.
The more you say it, it makes sense because we don't know who her parents were.
But what about this? What if she's the equivalent created by Jean Grey? Because Jean Grey had very similar reality warping powers, and do you know what I mean?
But she's been dead for 20 years.
Or,
right?
What about this, Nick? Here's a total like fanboy extrapolation. Hope the person is like created by Jean Grey, but all the mutant energy came from the Scarlet Witch, and bingo.
So maybe they whack Hope to give all the mutants their power back.
What if somebody told Cyclops you could bring back all the mutants if you just kill Hope?
He would maybe do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I could totally see...
But would the Avengers trying to stop that? Then?
Well, if you think about Wolverine siding with the Avengers post-Schism, maybe Wolverine...
But Storm sided with Uncanny.
I mean, with the way that the X-Men are set up now, if there was an influx of mutants, there is a support system to be able to back it up.
Yeah.
You're supposed to mute the phone before you do that, Sean.
Which I have to say, you know, that one good thing about this Avengers versus X-Men is at least it has us, like, speculating, you know, about possibility.
It's a civil war, you know?
Yeah.
But if he can't, if the X-Men killed her, if Cyclops killed her, wouldn't it be, like, X-Men X-Sanction or Cable kills the X-Men or something?
Cyclops is going to be on the Avengers... Before April, then so.
Which one is that? Is that the movie Avengers in this continuity?
He'll be on the new Avengers.
The new Avengers
that they talk about.
From a bigger picture, doesn't it make sense that X-Men versus Avengers, AVX, Avengers versus X-Men, is concluding Bendis' run when House of M was, you know, pretty much his first big story?
Disassembled.
Well, disassembled, but House of M, you know,
House of M was a big event.
Yeah, disassembled set up House of M because that's what started the whole Scarlet Witch being a whack job.
So House of M came out shortly after that. Mm-hmm. caused all this havoc in the X-Men franchise, which Bendis didn't have anything to do with. But now, you know, 8 years later, 10 years later, he's coming back, and in his final story, he'll have the opportunity to repair the damage that he did to the X-Men franchise by removing every...
every the damage, mutant. That was an editorial of your part. That's good.
Yeah. No, actually, I think it made the X-Men a lot more interesting to take out all of the peripheral mutants that weren't really even on the X-Men to reduce the number of mutants.
It made it more desperate.
Yeah. It was, at the time, I hated the idea, but then some of the stories that came out of it, you could kind of see where it was a good idea.
I think it cool needed stuff. Something definitively big to separate itself from the Morrison run, which was so... like the landscape of the X-Men had been so defined by the stories he told, and the interim was nothing.
Yeah.
I think this was a great way to really, you know, set a different tone from that.
Wait, Chuck being, Austin was nothing?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Chuck that Austin guy had some cool stuff. Did not agree with you. He's born before, not you.
I like the idea of putting Juggernaut on the team. I thought that was a good idea Chuck Austin had.
Give me another one.
Ooh, ooh. Angel and Husk.
Yeah, that was pedophile.
It was just
the
wrong.
The worst thing that Chuck Austin did, in my opinion, was say that Nightcrawler was, in fact, the son of the devil, and thus saying that the old thing with Nightcrawler was he looks like a demon, but in fact he's this morally correct person, so looks aren't everything, or don't judge a book by its cover. Chuck Austin comes in and says, well, yeah, do judge a book by its cover. If he looks like a devil, he's a devil.
Yeah.
Who introduced him being uber-religious and a priest almost?
Claremont.
Yeah, that was way back, yeah.
I actually thought the second strangest thing Austin ever did was try to explain Iceman's infatuation with Polaris by saying that subtly he's gay and in love with Northstar. I never understood.
And Annie
that.
The nurse, remember her?
Yeah.
Wait, isn't Polaris a woman?
Yeah.
Like the green haired chick?
Yeah.
What's that have to do with being gay?
Exactly.
When you like a girl,
you're gay. That was according to Chuck Austin.
Was Polaris a shim? I mean, was she a transvestite or
no? She was.
That's a cool book though.
We need Grant Morrison to write that one.
It was like literally I think someone said
Beast pretend he was gay. Remember that?
What's going on?
Hold on, I
want
to hear this cell phone ring. Keep going.
What are you doing, Sean? No, he has us muted.
Good point.
I think I muted him.
So, yeah, X-Men, they're crazy mutants.
Yeah.
Do you see Rick Remender tweeted that there's a Punisher by Rick Remender omnibus coming?
Why?
Didn't he write the Frankencastle? Mm-hmm. Like, is that really
That's what they're omnibuying.
Is that really omnibus worthy?
Is that a verb?
Apparently, I don't know.
That's why I said omnibus worthy.
And the X.
There were
Colin, what I've been doing is I've been pulling the interesting word juxtaposition that the panel's been using tonight and throwing it into Google to see what comes up.
Okay.
So wonderful phrases like suddenly gay, and like here's the first page that comes up. It's called the Hip Forums. So, you know, if you turn the iPad screen around, you'll see at various times during the conversation.
Joe's very interested. Yeah. We'll turn it around to Joe.
Go on.
I'm going to image Google search Polaris transvestite.
Okay. Good luck with that one.
Just for education.
I bet you get some good cosplay on that.
Morrison.
Now, hey, Colin, do you guys see the chat that I type in?
Yeah, I see it.
Oh, okay, because that's the other thing I try to... I give something back to the panel by giving you guys a running commentary underneath as well, if you get bored.
Okay.
But obviously you have to be reading it while the conversation...
Yeah, we can't see the chat window.
It's too, the text is too small.
Okay.
While we're on the subject, though, Grant Morrison wrote some really cool stories in The Invisibles about a cross-dresser. One of the characters was a cross-dresser. And the idea is that if a man dresses as a woman, demons are not able to recognize them whenever they cast spells. So
I'll use that as an excuse. Good deal.
There you go. Way to go, Nick.
Speaking of Grant Morrison, Ryan wanted to give his glowing, ringing, absolute 12 thumbs up recommendation to Batman Leviathan that
Shocking.
Came out today. Grant Morrison. It's the
sweet. Yeah, it's star-studded. Like,
yeah, looking forward to reading it, yeah.
He literally bought it and sat down and read it before going to work. He was that excited.
Good old Ryan.
So. We miss him. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
He should be back in February.
Okay.
Why
it's out of the Huska.
He's, yeah, switching shifts.
Sweet. Okay. Just for the podcast?
Yep. Okay. Next up, this one came out a couple weeks ago. I meant to reread it, but I never got around to it. But Defenders number one had a ton of fanfare. We had preview books. We had postcards. We had a poster that actually came out this week, a promo poster, which
figured so.
A little late. It had a one of the many postscripts to Fear Itself was a prequel for Defenders. It was funny because I now get my digital previews 2 weeks ahead of time for my Marvel books. And when it came out, I couldn't remember if I had read it or not, which is not exactly a ringing endorsement. As I flipped through it, everything seemed a little familiar, but I couldn't have told you the plot of it to save my life. So just wonder, I found it to be not that exciting. What is everybody else?
So I thought...
Give it a try.
I thought the whole reason.
Whoa!
You liked it?
No. Actually, I love the old Defenders.
Yeah, so did I. I had probably a full run of the old Defenders, Gargoyle, and all the great stuff. Uh oh.
So I thought the way that Nall escaped and how they set the team up was good, but I thought the way they picked the team and who was on it was just very random. Like, there was no good reason. Like, hey, let's go get that Iron Fist because he has a plane. Well, okay, at least one of you is an Avenger.
Basically, it's
go get a Quinjet.
You had the three founding Defenders: Doctor Strange, Silver Surfer, and Namor. They were the original Defenders.
But yeah. And at some point, Namor was eating Silver Surfer. Didn't quite get that. That was a little interesting context.
And then
the snow was falling when he's actually the surfer,
so
and he was catching snow on his
power set in a weird way. But She-Hulk is there because the original Defenders team.
But it's
had
red
the Hulk.
She-Hulk.
Yeah, it had the Hulk,
right? Yeah, I knew
with a big sword.
I get like, but they could have justified how they found people better than going, "Hey, he's got a plane. Let's get him."
They could have literally just wrote, "Matt Fraction really likes Iron Fist, so we're throwing."
Well, wasn't
him
he in a Defender originally?
No.
Oh, I thought he was.
No, it was just the four originally, and then when it expanded, I don't think he was ever a Defender. Mm-hmm.
But the reason Matt Fraction's Iron Fist was so good was it had nothing to do with the rest of the Marvel Universe. They're off in the Eighth City and Seventh City, whatever. He's introducing great characters like King. But he was introducing all those cool immortal warriors and stuff, or immortal weapons.
Yes.
I don't fault him. He's turned Iron Fist into a really cool character.
But Brubaker did that. Didn't Brubaker start that run? And then Fraction took it over? Yeah.
No. Sorry. They co-wrote it.
They co-wrote it.
From the beginning. Took it over. Yeah. But.
Yeah, and that was a good run. And I still don't like Iron Fist in the white costume. I feel like it's
it should be green.
White Lantern Iron Fist.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that I don't like about New Avengers, is that set that all up and then just kind of dropped it, and it moved on to some other story, maybe Fear Itself tie-ins or something. But that was kind of an interesting story where they were fighting, what's his name, died, Dr. Voodoo, and all that, and then it just kind of spun off. It just went weird.
Got canceled.
Right.
New Avengers.
Right, but that New Avengers story was going somewhere, and then all of a sudden it stopped. It just...
And there's yet to be any talk about who the new Sorcerer Supreme is.
Yeah, I thought that too, yeah.
I thought that Doctor Strange was training some kid or some...
Yeah, but not to be that.
Well, because at the end of the New Avengers, they say, "Oh, so are you the new Sorcerer Supreme again?" And he said something along the lines like, "I can't be."
Right.
But then they never said...
Who it is,
once you had
it,
you bro. Can't be it again, maybe.
He got it taken away from
him. Yeah, so they made it clear that he is not...
Maybe it's Satana.
No, wait, what happened to Voodoo's brother that was...
Well, that was just like a spirit in his head
type
thing.
He
wanted revenge.
Yeah, but all these neat stories.
Happy.
Yeah,
yeah, he wasn't happy, and then he kind of just disappeared.
Yeah,
he stopped talking to them.
That's
yeah.
next year's big event.
Maybe, but it's all Bendis, and he's leaving the Avengers, so we'll never know.
I agree with Matt. Like, the Defenders number one was It was a fun book, and it was an okay book, but in the context of how heavily it was promoted, it was kind of... It was just a...
And I normally love Dotson art, but the art wasn't as bad, but the colors were just very washed out.
It had the feeling of being rushed, but I don't know how it could be rushed because they've been hyping
for 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, they had some of those images for 6 months.
That was one. And that was another one just... In the interest of full disclosure, I think we got overshipped on that one as well, so the sales numbers are going to be higher than really are.
Yeah, but I mean, I normally love their art, and that one just... And, like, Chris Bocciolo, however you say it, I liked his art in Wolverine and the X-Men this week. I hated it the last 2 weeks. I hated it almost every time I see it, but this time I liked it.
So not the Iceman issue, but the newest issue.
The one that came out today.
Okay, I haven't flipped through it yet.
Yeah, it's just
weird. He's one of those guys where his art is very dependent on who his inker is. If he has a good inker, his art is much cleaner, but if he has a poor inker, it can really be almost indecipherable.
Big picture question on a side note. What's your guy's favorite inker in the industry and your favorite inker at Marvel? Colin, you first.
What does that
happen? For the most part, I don't pay a whole lot of attention. I'm going to say probably my favorite inker, only because the books were so good, is Terry Austin inking John Byrne on X-Men.
Ooh.
And that's the only time I've really noticed an inker, only because I don't like him inking himself.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back on those books are almost perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The art on that is so good.
Can top that.
Okay.
Scott Williams over Jim Lee.
Oh, definitely. Best inker in the business. See, I brought up the question because I was looking through the Pasquale Ferry Thor run just before the podcast started and noticing that it was straight pencils to colors.
But have you seen Lee inked by anyone else to make you think that...
It's Lee, not the
inker? Right.
I've seen the pencils of Jim Lee, and the pencils of Jim Lee are equally as detailed as when he's inked by Scott Williams. But the thing that makes Scott Williams the best inker in the business is when Scott Williams inks Dave Finch or Jim Lee or anybody, he has the same... flair for fun. Like, the art looks like Scott Williams drew the lines fast and had fun with it. He had a blast inking the lines, not sitting with a brush drawing so slowly, agonizing over every stroke, but having fun with it. Anyway, and the best inker at Marvel is Danny Meekie. He makes Joe Quesada look better than he's ever looked before.
That's saying something, because Joe Quesada is not all that good.
He's a master. Modern day master.
Who?
Joe Quesada. He's awesome.
Wait, he's no architect.
I didn't say.
I thought he was CEO.
He was once an interior guy.
Was he?
You really like his pencils?
Yeah, don't you? Who are you? He's awesome. Didn't you ever see his run on X Factor back in the day?
Yeah.
What about his covers on Wolverine Origin? What?
Nobody read Ash back in the day?
Not one of my favorites.
I would say he's acceptable. I wouldn't say he's like, oh my god, he's awesome.
X-Factor run, he followed Larry Stroman, and Larry Stroman was otherworldly in that initial X-Factor run.
You thought he was otherworldly good or
otherworldly bad?
Hold on. We just gloss over Ash. Did somebody give an Ash reference?
I threw out Ash.
So wasn't that Jimmy Palamotti?
That was Palamotti. They co-owned that character, yeah.
And it was a fireman, right?
Right.
Yep. I like that book. It was back in the day when they had all the die-cut chromium heavy-duty cardstock covers.
I still have his wizard trading card.
Jeez, I go to ring up somebody, and all of a sudden we're on to Ash? What? That was not on the agenda.
Adam's left the podcast.
Adam just up and quit? Oh,
did he actually leave, or did he just go outside?
His coat's here. Oh. He's here. Oh, okay. He left the iPad for us.
I had something I wanted to talk about, and I completely left my
head. Klaus Janson's my favorite inker of all time.
Oh, good pick, yes.
And currently, I'm a little biased because I'm a big Invincible fan, but I like Cliff Rathburn. In fact, I bought a few pages of his, of the inks, and I just think I've seen the pencils and I've seen the ink. He adds a lot of fun to that book.
Oh, I know. Vince Coletta.
Ah, come on.
Actually, it's a very funny story. A customer of mine, I got in a copy of that Vince Coletta book, and he bought it. And I said, oh, I was hoping to get a chance to, you know, look through this before, you know, I sold it. And so that Christmas, he gave it back to me as a Christmas present.
Oh,
I thought
really?
That was really nice. I haven't looked at it yet, but.
I mean, Joe Sinnott probably is the inker that's probably done the most work at Marvel, right?
Probably.
Yeah, he's still cashing in on that at the conventions with his.
Or Terry Austin's up there, too.
Yeah. Oh, I wish.
Terry, I agree with you, though, about Terry Austin. He does Burn better than Burn.
Especially
does.
Because when I read the Burn X-Men, I was reading it in Essentials, so I was just looking at the line work. And, oh, just.
Did he ink Fantastic Four? Or just X-Men?
I don't.
Joe Sinnott? He did.
No, Terry Austin. Did he do Burn's Fantastic Four? I don't know.
What do we care? Aren't they just tracers?
No. They add depth. They add depth.
It was a joke. It was a Chasing Amy joke. Sorry. There,
no, we're not going on to Kevin Smith movies. No, we had enough of that on Facebook today.
So, what is it, the Nubian?
Yeah.
Now I have to watch that movie when I get home tonight.
Here, this is another recent Marvel book I thought of. X-Force last week came in bagged. Those that read it, I read it. I didn't see a reason for bagging it.
Absolutely no reason.
It's a red herring.
It was, but it was also, those bags suck because they don't sit on the shelf nice. Also, the front copy, for some reason, I don't know if it's heat or what it is, starts to fill with air, which then pushes all the other books off the shelf.
The other thing I thought was really stupid was not even that they bagged the regular shelf copy. They bagged
the spoiler variant, which made no sense either.
Well, no, bagging the spoiler variant makes sense, right? Because you don't want to spoil it.
But if
bagging everything else doesn't make sense.
But if anything needs to be sold on its cover,
it's a variant.
But
so now you can't see the variant. And no one's ever seen what the variant looks like because they won't publish the image. So now I have a bag that has a different color X-Force than the regular.
I'll buy it.
A variant bag.
Mine came in damaged. I know, and you're laughing. How could a variant be damaged? Because it was literally folded in half.
Uh-huh.
So.
Isn't that the Pittsburgh Comic exclusive?
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, special creature. No, I got a special exclusive this week.
Yeah, you guys will get a kick out of this.
Crap, where is it?
Uh-oh, I'm going to...
Well, basically, I got a copy of Generation Hope that was about a third of the book. It was
it got
missed in the cutting process. It had shifted, and it was about a third of the book. I tried to read it. It didn't make any sense.
The cool thing was it was like a
wouldn't have
free
made sense
copy.
If you had the whole book anyway.
I felt that. Oh, did we lose Sean? No, we lost Sean. Oh, I see his. Okay, now I see
he's
his commentary. Okay, one of the things that you guys talked about on Facebook, we were just on my Facebook page, we were kicking around ideas to talk about. And one of the things they got into was collecting. And, you know, versus, collectors versus readers. And there's Sean. So one of the things that I found interesting was, you know, some of you guys are just readers. You don't really collect. You don't care about the, you know, keeping the books and stuff. Where others of you, you know, like Nick, you know, you have files and, you know, stuff like that. It was funny. I was talking to someone today about the subject, and I said, as soon as I opened the store, my collecting bug left. And, like, it was actually, when I knew it was when I got in a copy of Iron Man number 1, a book that I've wanted forever, since high school, since seeing the picture in Overstreet. Wanting to have that book.
And you sold it to me.
And I had one come in, and I was so excited. I was taking it home. I showed it to Matt. And he's like, well, you know, what's it worth? And I looked it up. I'm like, oh, it would sell for about this. And Matt goes, I'll give you that for it. And I didn't even hesitate, and I sold it to him. And that's when I realized that my desire to have really no longer exists.
Was outstripped by your desire to have Matt's money.
It was. It was. Well, no. But it was a case of I was going. I could have this book at home in my basement.
He's gonna wet his beak.
Or I could pay my phone bill.
Well, don't you think?
And it really,
that makes total sense.
But don't you think eBay has really ruined the collectability of comics? It used to be all about the hunt, and now.
It's still about the hunt, and the fact that it's easier to get it on eBay.
If you really want an issue, you're going to get it on eBay.
Or just the internet. Period.
Yeah,
or the temperature sale. Pittsburgh Comics.
But unless it's something very rare like Detective 27 or something like that, you're going to find... I mean, if I go look for Tales of Suspense 39, there's probably 12, 15 copies on eBay right now.
Let me check.
20 years ago, That would have been...
Yeah, it was like you had to scour conventions.
Yeah, you had to call shops and...
Because I agree with you in that sense, because I grew up in the middle of the Midwest, like nowhere. The closest comic book convention would have been probably 5 hours away, which meant, you know, as a junior high kid, I didn't go to conventions. So, like, you know, I could only dream of even tangibly seeing key Silver Age and Golden Age books, let alone purchasing. Because I still remember the very first convention I went to, you know, about 5 years ago, just seeing some of those books for the first time, like, in the flesh, kind of blew
me away.
And now
it's kind of weird, too. Like, even at Ghetto Convention at Century 3 Mall, the first or second year they had it,
that's a little editorialized. Yeah,
I'm sitting there going, okay.
The guy had two copies of JLA 4. Is that the real big early issue that you wanted, Justice League? Was it 4 or 1?
4 is the first time they meet up with Green Arrow. I don't know what that means.
I don't think that's what you're going for.
I think it was JLA 1, because it was...
I have every issue of the series, so I know.
Yeah.
You know, actually, here's a good point. Like, okay, so Nick started collecting in the 90s. In the 90s, X-Men was at 281, all right? So for someone like Nick or me at our age level, when we started collecting, Classic X-Men was redoing the X-Men run, and it was very feasible that it would catch up. Somebody who starts collecting now, there's like, you know, 500 or 600 issues just of Uncanny, plus 10 other series. So collecting is a total different animal today that's come out.
We have a podcaster who every time there's a temperature sale or a good back issue sales, fills another block of Batman of hundreds. Like he's bought 500 to 600, 400 to 500, 300 to 400. Now he's getting into the range where he's not going to be doing that because, well, A, he's having a kid, and B, 200 to 300 is probably not as cheap as the other ones are. But
probably, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, don't forget, so there's one podcaster who started doing that this year, okay? In the 90s, there were hundreds of thousands of people that started doing that because it was accessible. Collecting was accessible. Yeah.
And I have very,
like... The 90s was based on collecting, not reading.
Yeah,
right.
You have to keep that in mind. So people that are they're children of the 90s, you know, that came into comics, probably got into comics through... exposure to other collectibles like trading cards, which they experienced a boom and a decline right prior to that led a lot of people right into comic books. So the collecting buzz was at its peak. So if you know, as most things are, if you start off a certain way, it generally routes how you know, the rest of your course.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One to read and one to bag.
And this is why you still mine chromium on Minecraft.
Well, and also...
chromium is going to be really valuable sometimes.
But it used to be the mindset for the stores, too, was you'd order a couple of extra copies to put into back issues. And that you really don't do that anymore. Also, the advent of the trade paperback and the fact... Like Brian Hibbs bemoans regularly, everything is collected. So you don't have to get the issues if you want to get it. Even the lamest miniseries, you know, is... Yeah,
not old,
is.
Not like...
Not old stuff, no, but the current stuff, so the need to collect the current books isn't there because you know if you want to read it.
Is that considered collecting?
Depends if you want to read it or...
reading them?
No, not necessarily.
That's what the line in the sand is. Like, I think that there's two separate things which you can do both of, but I think that they are separate. If I go back and get old issues, and my idea is completely don't care about the condition, the value, or historical merit of the book, I simply want to read something that is not on the shelf currently, I consider that an MO of somebody who is a reader. Somebody is saying, I want this book. I have no intention of reading it because it's too rare, and I want it for its intrinsic historical or financial value. That, to me, is the motivation of someone who is a collector.
Right.
Then I'm a collector, unfortunately.
I'm a
reader.
The companies took it a step further in the 90s when they noticed people were collecting characters' first appearances or collecting Elseworlds stories, and then they started doing line-wide events like... Okay, this month, every issue has a new character being introduced.
Who did that?
DC. This month, every issue is an Elseworlds series. You guys remember mm-hmm. that?
So wait, DC did publicity stunts in the 90s?
Yeah.
Everybody did publicity in the 90s, buddy. The 90s were all publicity.
You know, was a really good two-parter in that, too, between Superman and Superboy, but anyways.
You know, Nick, that's an interesting idea, though, about the collecting, because I know a lot of us, if we talk collecting or even the Joe on the street, if you say I collect comic books.
What about the Joe podcast?
People are immediately.
I collect and read.
People are immediately going to think that you're collecting for monetary value, but.
Oh, absolutely.
But the idea of collecting for historical value, because I would.
That would be my defense in some instances. For what I do, because I really feel closer to something when I can touch it.
Well, see.
It's not a logical thing, certainly. I was about to reference. Well, I said, "Well, I'll reference Star Trek: First Contact," where this is. Well, this is going to get really nerdy, and you guys can make please make fun of me afterwards, so I can feel better. They go back in time, and the first ship ever to Zephyr Cochrane's ship. They need to touch it so they can feel a connection to it. And, like, to me, that really means something. Like, I touch it, I hold it, and I think about that time. And I know that sounds kind of lame, but, like, I don't sell my books, so I'm not collecting them to sell them.
Yeah, no, well, no, that's why I collect. You know, when you said that, I started to think because I collect a lot of back issues that I really have. I'm not collecting to resale, but they're all key historical issues that.
Right.
It means something to just know that I have it.
Oh, it means it's worth so much more to like, you as the collector.
Well, like today,
than to somebody to
like
sell.
Like today, I bought Superman 235, mostly famous for a Neil Adams cover, but also a fairly well-known Dennis O'Neill story from the 70s.
Yeah,
right.
And that, as soon as Colin got it in, I was like giddy, and I've been looking at that book every day that I've been in the store waiting. You know, to buy it, and he just terrified someone else was going to take it, and you know it's close to $100 book.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where, you know, I'm not going to go get it slabbed to flip it. I literally, you know, I paid the money for it. Some people would argue, you know, a lot of money for something I have no interest in turning a profit on. But
or
it's like
assuming as reader. You know, as a reader.
Yeah, because I have the trade of it, so I've read the story.
So I'm
but
curious.
It's like to have that book, you know, is like one of those key Superman issues.
See,
that
I know exactly what you're saying because I feel that same way. However, whenever I ask a layperson or whenever I discuss comic collecting with a layperson, it's so ridiculous to me when they're like, oh, is that going to go up in value? Because
first question I get every single time. How much is that? What's the most expensive
book
you have?
Yeah.
Because they have no concept of buying them to read the stories.
Yeah.
But I will say along those lines, like, if an issue, like if, you know, Colin had a key issue that was, like, fine versus New Mint, as long as it's in a decent enough aesthetic condition, like, no tears, you know, if it's a little bent,
yeah,
but you know, he has, I don't care about stuff like that. I literally just like having.
So in 20 years, when your daughter has to go to college, are you going to sell your books to pay for it?
That's probably going to be up to my wife.
But that's
hold
the
on,
point.
Buddy.
Right?
Tell the guys, what do you want to watch? What do you want to watch? What is it?
When she goes to college, are you going to sell her comics?
No. I never bought my comics to sell them, and I kind of cover all the bases. I have, like, Daredevil 16, which is the first John Romita Spider-Man slabbed. But I don't have a ton of slab books, but I have that one because that's a book I've always wanted. And then you guys already know I have my early Spider-Man run. I have that bound into hardbacks, which is up above the TV over my shoulder. And then I have single issues as well as some of the collected editions, and you know, it's kind of it depends on the story and how quickly I want to read it and then how much it means to me. So
I've actually been toying with the idea of framing some of my key historical issues and hanging them on the wall as opposed to slab, you know, as an alternative to slabbing.
Just make sure there's no sun anymore.
You
just have to get the archive quality glass to sometimes
doesn't do it.
They'll be, ideally, my comic book room won't have any windows. So.
I cover all my windows.
So, yeah. I mean, that's my plan. It's not to hang them out in the foyer where people can see them, but just to put them on the wall of my room so that I can see them whenever I want to. Rather, so
with just the fact that you use the term for my comic book room, so we're already in a different category. Well, and, you know, guys, we're talking about collecting, and people have been collecting stuff as long as there's been human history. You know, we're just clued into the pop culture stuff from our generation, but, you know, people used to collect stamps and buttons and weapons.
Because I collect a lot of different things besides comic books. Like, I collect soda.
Sneakers.
That's weird. Sneakers, soda. Yeah, absolutely.
You are a little OCD, Nick.
Liquor. I collect liquor. That's weird.
Wait, do you collect it or do you just collect the liquor?
I don't consume nearly half of what I have. I keep some of it just in bottles, like Absolute bottles, for instance. Like, there's ones that are regional. There are ones that only exist in, like, duty-free stuff places. I buy them on eBay.
Wow, I didn't know they did.
Yeah. If there's a thing, there's a collector for that thing. And I think that's mostly because it's just, like what Sean was saying, it's a hunter-gatherer gene that he's either turned on or turned off to either more or less degree.
Yeah, no, I agree, Nick.
And the hunting doesn't exist anymore, to Matt's point.
Yeah.
Into the degree that it used to be. Now it's simply gathering, which produces TV shows like Hoarders and My Life.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's the collecting has turned into this thing where it really just comes down to you assign a price to whatever it is you want, and then it's just whenever you're willing to pay that price.
There's Nick.
What's that?
What's weird, though, is, like, if I have somebody come over to my house and I show them my comics, I have a couple boxes of my best books. I show them that either exclusively or first, because those are the books, like, I'm the most proud of.
Yeah.
And the pride of just owning them for some reason is something that, you know, I have. And I don't really, you know, it's not something I really think about too much, but it's my go-to thing. Like, here, look at these books.
And do you ever find invariably the books that you've chosen to put in those boxes, like, that person would probably comb through your collection and find an entirely different box of stuff?
To some degree, yes. I mean, like, in that same box, some of them are autographed books that I had that were signed by people I really like. There's a number of books in there that are, or I should say number, there's like 6 or 7 books that are in there only because I got letter columns in them. So those, like, only have, like, personal value.
Right.
But beyond that, they're primarily either significantly historic key books to comics as a medium or first appearances.
Right.
And the first appearances are the books that, and I'm, like, trying to write, a little bio now for my collecting. And as I'm writing it, I'm trying to trace back, like, you know, the origins of me getting into comics. And one of the most important things for me was the 1990 Marvel Universe trading card series.
Me too.
And in each one of those cards had the character's first appearance. So you see that.
No, I'm laughing, like, because I was out of collecting in 90.
You know,
and I already
subset of those cards did it for me were the famous battles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those, I tried to get every one of those famous battles in comic book form because I thought if it was important enough to put on a trading card, then, I need to read this comic.
One of my best friends and I, like, we were, like, obsessed with Wolverine 10 because we had never read it, but we saw this, you know, the greatest battles of Sabretooth and Wolverine, and we like Sabretooth and Wolverine. It's like, well, this is the first time they battle.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be
epic. God. So Nick, we got to do a sleepover.
All I'm thinking right now is we need a support group where you guys can be like, hi, I'm Nick, and I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
No, but it's
that's
funny.
That's the store.
Because,
that's a podcast.
This is that support group.
I'm
here.
Not nearly as bad as these two.
Nick, come on, show Nick me somebody. Here. I'm tired of looking at the boxes. I feel like sorry. I'm sitting in the corner. There we go.
But yeah, for me.
Like, where's the kid?
Like Batroc the Leaper's first appearance, and that's in my book. And like most people don't care about that character.
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
Like, that's a weird one. You know, like, I have Agent 13. But, like, I like you know, like, I try to get all the rogues, so if it's a character
get
I like...
the hell away from me!
I know I'm getting off a little off topic, and we can jump back to this, but it was brought up not too long ago, I remember. I think it was Matt who might have said that Captain America doesn't have that great of a rogues gallery.
True.
And if you really... yeah, because, I mean...
He's okay.
Well, you got...
He's no Batman.
Red Skull.
Zemo.
But, and Zemo,
Back
but...
Backtrack! F the French!
The Leaper? But, wow. I mean, but, you know, they seem to be doing so much with that character right now and with the movies. Nobody for years has made him a character that really fits. Just does not make any sense. And he is a popular character.
Yeah,
Captain America.
Like
he's popular in a campy way.
That's because his villains, like when he first appeared and he got on there, were simply Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean,
and when you're fighting the Nazis, it's like...
And I think mainly he took off because... Or he became as popular as he was mainly because of the Avengers.
So here's a side question. What Marvel character has the best rogues gallery?
Wolverine.
Spider-Man. I'd say Spider-Man.
Yeah, I'd say Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, hands down.
No, I spoke too soon.
Has
Spider-Man.
The largest, most popular, right?
So let's take out Spider-Man. Who is it then? Because
Wolverine.
On a whole.
Well, I would say the X-Men.
Daredevil. He has the Anti-Men.
So. Nah.
Daredevil's the same. My daughter has told me who the best villain is, and it's because the name is so much fun to say, and it's Dr. Octopus.
Okay, start working on her, the Dr. Dread Octopus. Dormammu.
No, I would say if you took away Spider-Man, the X-Men have the next best rogues gallery.
Yeah.
I also would put a vote in for the Fantastic Four. They have
All about
no,
that.
No, they have a good one, too.
They have a good rogues.
They share a lot of a lot of rogues, though.
They do.
Because in my mind, DC has always won the contest of the better villains.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, nobody in comics has a better rogues gallery than Batman.
Comics or anywhere is better than the Joker.
Comics and sociologists will tell you Batman, that's one of the reasons he's one of the most popular characters.
Although I do think Batman is insane.
Why?
Because the definition of insanity is repeating the same action, expecting different results. How long has he been locking up the Joker?
Yeah.
And the Joker keeps getting out and doing it again.
But he's not going to kill in his... What are his options? He has to follow the law. But he can't kill him.
It's a paradox.
Dressing up in a cape and fighting crime is not the first time.
So what you're saying is capital punishment's not allowed in...
Oh yeah, Nick, way to point out the obvious.
You're saying capital punishment's not allowed in Gotham?
I don't know. Maybe not.
If I were a billionaire, I would work on social issues instead of punching people in the face if I wanted to solve crime.
Yeah, but look what... His dad worked on social issues, and look what happened to him. So.
Well, that's because he couldn't fight.
Doesn't he do both?
He does become...
He couldn't fight bullets?
A Batman of his own in Flashpoint.
His father out every day. He couldn't fight a gun?
I just think that those pearls were tacky anyway.
No, I'm just saying his dad did the social thing, and so Bruce decided to take it another way. The new Batman was excellent and does kind of address some of this, so I can't give everything away. You guys haven't read it, but...
I want to go back to something. You guys were saying that DC has really good villains, but if you think about it, though, their main villains, it's just Batman has a lot of villains.
What do you mean?
And his villains, I think, are really what people think of as being...
Well, you got
the
Flash's robes,
you've got Batman, you've got Flash, and then you've got the JLA villains. Like, the ones that are kind of, like...
Ooh, Starro?
Darkseid...
Yeah.
Borderline.
But I don't... Besides that, Green Lantern, I don't think even Flash, like, Flash villains? Like...
Yeah, Captain Boomerang. Ooh, look, I'm a...
No, but it's fun how they always work as a group, and they always fail, and they have their own code, and it's...
Jeff Johns
really
brought
different,
he took them to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what makes the Flashes work.
But yeah, I love that they have a code.
They call themselves the Rogues.
Yeah.
Catwoman is a good villain.
That's Batman.
Oh, good point.
Come on,
yeah.
Where have you been? Well, what about Superman?
That's one of Superman's biggest problems.
Yeah, I mean, they can't make a movie because they can't come up with a villain for him.
Beyond Luthor.
Other than Nuclear Man.
Can fight a polar bear.
Joe F., you doing your Al Bundy impersonation there?
No?
Honestly, this lean he's got going on.
I thought that Sean would prefer seeing two people instead of one.
It,
so.
Here, I'll turn it.
Fine.
So right
go lean over by Adam, man. Trying to creep me out a little.
What, you don't want to hang out? Be cool?
That's all right. We were giving Joe F. a hard time on Facebook today.
Yeah, what about? I didn't...
Oh, you missed it? Oh.
I thought you guys were, like, singing my praises. I thought you were paying tribute to me.
Yeah, we were like that, Joe.
So apparently sarcasm's not your strong point, is it?
So, Colin, you know, to round out the evening, I notice we're 4 days from Christmas.
Yes.
What have you noticed have been the store's Christmas must-haves?
Walking Dead. My gosh. Shocking. I mean, I normally... Well, no.
It's Birth of Our Lord, like Walking Dead. That's
Well, that's very true. But, no, I knew it was good because of the books, or the TV show and everything, but I had a guy come in by the compendium and 9 through 15 for himself.
Who?
I didn't see that coming.
Who knew that the Walking Dead feature should have been done for Christmas rather
than Halloween? It didn't do that much at Halloween, and when the series started, but at Christmas, I mean, I just got a huge reorder in today, and I hope it's enough to get me through the weekend.
People like to buy stuff at Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Sets of trades.
It's been selling very, very well. Lots of stuff. The good stuff is selling, which, I mean, it should be, but, like, Batman the Black Mirror is now out of print until they print more. But I was getting more of those every week. Batman Noel. Those are the big ones that I've seen big runs
regularly.
Other than that, it's just been lots of stuff. Like, I was just looking at my numbers for today, and crazy. Just, I mean, a really big day, but also a really big day just in new comics. I had a really good Wednesday, what a normal Wednesday would be, just in new comic sales, which is strange. Just it was nice that all these big books came out today.
What are you guys looking forward to for Christmas? Any comic book related top of your list items?
Absolute Sandman Volume 5.
I hope you get that.
You know I got it. I picked it up.
Is that to go? Well, what do you think of the first four volumes of Absolute Sandman?
He hasn't read them. He's a putz. But, you know, one book I'm really looking forward to that's coming out, I don't know when, but soon, hopefully, is the Annotated Sandman.
Yeah.
The only thing that made me sad about that, in the solicit, they included the annotations to the one issue that actually in the trade, they included the script in annotations in the back of that trade, so I was a little disappointed looking at the sample going, I've already read all this.
Mm-hmm. Somebody sell me on Sandman.
It's the greatest comic book of all time.
Sandman
is just such a big story, and it's just I don't want to say it's a fun read, but it's a fascinating read. It's reading literature with pictures is how it reads.
Yeah.
Once you get through that first volume, which has some rough parts, after that, it's just a really good story that you just want to keep doing. Yes, very. I mean, not very challenging, but there's a lot to it.
It challenges preconceived notions of a lot of things that, you know, ideologies and methodologies you just take for granted.
Podcaster of the year right there.
The basic story of it is you have these seven, what are they called? Not undead, but basically gods, and it's the god. You have death, dream, desire, destruction, delirium.
Dessert.
Not dessert.
They're like the gods of gods. Like if the gods prayed to the gods, the endless
right,
are
the
gods.
Endless,
they would
thank you.
To.
I couldn't come up with the. I knew it was an E word. So you have the endless, and it's just a fascinating story about them.
And the fact that he wrote it is such as these are the concepts, and he gave these concepts personalities, and that's interesting. Like, what would desire say? You know,
the concept of desire. How does the concept of desire interact with the concept of dreams?
Right. I don't know if that appeals to me. Just for me, in my opinion. Again, I mean, I respect you guys, but that I don't know. That hook doesn't work for me. I don't know if I want my comics to teach me that.
Uh-huh.
It's not escapism as such. Like, a lot of my friends that are into, like, pure superhero, you know, people punching people exclusively, which is most of my diet, have not, you know, really embraced it like the masses have.
simply because, but yet the non-comic book reading masses love it.
Dave would have loved that Green Lantern.
It really is. It's like Colin said, it's literature with pictures. And it's one of those things, Sean, that honestly, I think it's very difficult to describe. Like, descriptions don't do it justice. It's really one of those things you almost have to sit down and read it before you can decide if you like it.
But don't judge it on volume one.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Right. I'd
but
pick
you
up...
need volume one.
Yeah.
It's in volume four.
Sam Keith artwork in volume one.
But whoa! It's just one of those things. I didn't think I would like it, and I resisted it for many years, and then I happened to pick up the first two volumes because I was at a Neil Gaiman public appearance, and I read them and loved it, and I really didn't think I would. I didn't think it would be for me.
Did you say whoa because you're a fan of Sam Keith?
Yeah, I actually liked a lot of the Sam Keith stuff back in the day.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Sam Keith. Old school Sam, though, not the new sketchy stuff. I like the Sam of that era. Sam,
and I like when he used to do all those covers on Marvel Comics Presents. And
I love the way that he would draw a torn costume and it would look like phone cords coming off of the rips.
But
he had giant feet on every character.
But yeah, Sean, I would just say it's really just one of those things that you really have to try it to determine if you like it. And as everyone said, the first volume is probably not the best place to make that decision because it's the classic case of a series finding its voice. And it took about 8 issues before it finds its voice.
Although that first volume is the most closely related to overall DC continuity, where it kind of ties into the Silver Age Sandman, the guy with the gas mask, and how the gas mask Sandman was channeling the...
Wesley Dodds.
Very good. All right. So he was channeling Dream. And Dream kind of has a suit... Okay, the Sandman of the Neil Gaiman series has a suit where he has a mask that kind of looks like that gas mask. Anyway.
Cool. But, I'm familiar. I got exposed to that Sandman through the Starman, hardbacks.
But right, that's right.
Hey, the wife's cooking.
just realize, though, Sean, that the Neil Gaiman Sandman, other than that first volume, really has absolutely nothing to do with Wesley Dodds.
Yeah.
I mean, as the series progresses.
I think there's even isn't there a JLA appearance in that first volume?
Yeah, like Martian Manhunter and
Aquaman?
Yeah, so it's like a very peripheral thing. It's like just enough to get your feet wet and get you interested in the rest of the run, where it completely deviates from the DC universe. Yeah.
The rest of the series, I would say, is almost more fantasy.
The Sam Keith artwork and the Sam Keith character designs is what sold me on it.
So has anybody read any holiday-related books?
I read the Brave and the Bold holiday issue.
I did, too, and I loved it.
Yeah,
I thought it was great.
I also read the Journey into the Mystery holiday issue with Loki. That was fantastic. Huh. I know a lot of people haven't been enjoying that series, but the holiday issue of Journey into Mystery,
yeah,
really good.
Well, I noticed that some of Journey into Mystery has like kind of one shot type stories. You know, they had one about Mephisto.
Yeah.
Not
I
too long
that
ago.
One. That wasn't
the really, looked kind of interesting.
The really cool thing about the Journey into Mystery is I didn't realize it was a Christmas themed issue until about halfway through.
Yeah. And plus, that's one of those things you kind of have to advertise for, too, a little bit.
But it was kind of cool. It was just cool the way it was done. So, that's a good... That and the Brave and the Bold are...
Yeah, Brave and the Bold was funny. Now, it's not as good as the cartoon episode where, you know, Red Tornado is trying to learn the meaning of Christmas. But,
that was so cool.
Which is just great. But, it was good. It was good. It wasn't really Christmas. It was really a Hanukkah.
It was a holiday
issue. A holiday issue, yes.
The holiday story I'm looking forward to is in 4 days.
Yes.
What's that?
Doctor Who.
No question about it. That's the most important thing happening that day.
Yes. What is it? The Widow, the something in the wardrobe, something like that?
So did they actually air the Christmas episode on Christmas? Is that how it works?
Why am I on
both? Do they do this every year?
So, yep. Nick, you have to write me up a what should I watch to learn Doctor Who?
Season one
from 1960?
I think, honestly, if you were to start with just the Matt Smith stuff, you'd be fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I rewatch everything, you know, like almost every day I watch different Doctor Who from back in the day, and that stuff's fairly irrelevant, like, at least to enjoy it. There's some subtle nods here and there, but getting into Doctor Who is they do a really good job every time they restart.
Yeah, you could start with the Matt Smith. I remember I watched the first Matt Smith, and then I went back to watch the Eccleston and really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it does give you a lot of, you know, flavor to it, but...
It's still hard to believe that he only did one season, because there was so much stuff from that.
Yeah, the Ninth Doctor was only one season, and then 10, it took over for, 2, 3, and 4.
Yep.
And from 5 and then through 6 so far has been Matt Smith. And I'll tell you, they already announced this week that the Amy and Rory are out halfway through the season.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yep.
Oh, I'm not watching it, because Amy's the hot redhead girl, right? That was the only reason I was
That'd be one way to describe her, yes.
She's actually the first companion who would be able to be on American television. Because British standards of beauty are about...
Hey, now, I really like Donna.
For us.
But yeah, Amy, yes.
So, on the Christmas present list, I bought myself the entire run of Why and the definitive hardcover edition.
Please read
weekend.
That. I know you don't read a lot.
Point. I do.
That, but no, I'm just saying, that is a really great series.
I won't get there. Just haven't read it yet.
Let's do this.
I just bought it Sunday. Relax.
Let's go around and discuss, like must-haves. If somebody needs something for Christmas, what you'd recommend, like... Right off the top,
happened today.
Right off the top of your mind.
I probably didn't handle this situation as well as I should have.
Batman
or could
and
have.
Black Mirror.
Nah,
but a guy came in and says, "My son wants to get into graphic novels. What do you have?" And I just kind of went, "I have a whole store."
I'll take one of those.
Right. I just kind of froze up because I said to him, it's like walking to the grocery store and saying, "I'm hungry. What do you got?" You know,
the guy was kind of upset with you that you didn't immediately have something.
Yeah,
it was a very vague question.
Oh, as vague as possible.
Like a movie store. My son wants to get into movies.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I took it. But
Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it was a case where the dad only had half the story because. I was like, well, if he just wants to get started, Watchmen. Yeah. I mean, if you have no place else to start, start there.
How old is he?
Teenager, like 16, 17.
So he probably loves pirates. Perfect.
Right, well, perfect.
But,
yeah.
But then mom comes over and she's like, well, he wanted Batman.
I'm like, okay, well, now you give me something to work with. Yes.
If you've never read comics, the Watchmen would be like... very far from my list because it only works if you know about the tropisms of comic books.
Yeah.
It fails otherwise.
I would not. If The Watchmen was the first comic I read, I would never have read another comic.
Same here.
The first thing that would come to my mind if somebody asked, especially if they asked in Batman, I'd first recommend. Well, if they were really wanting to start.
Okay, took
into
home three Batman.
Batman
traits. So let's see if you come up with the three that we.
Dark Knight. Dark
one
Knight.
Would be year one.
Mm-hmm.
One would be Long Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one. Well, if you have to read Dark Knight. But if the thing is, if you've read.
I wouldn't do Long Halloween and Dark Victory same time.
And I was thinking that, but I'd wait and see, you know, what you read out of that one, and then, yeah.
But yeah, no, those
between
those
the three, you should find the direction of Batman.
Were you out of Black Mirror? Because that's what I was.
I'm out of the Black Mirror. Yeah,
I would send when you guys talk about a Christmas present to get somebody. I was waiting because to me, like the first thing I would get somebody would be Absolute Long Halloween.
Yeah,
well, absolutely.
It's like,
yeah,
it's a perfect collection of the perfect intro comic book. Like everybody knows who Batman is, and I shouldn't say nobody, but the layperson obviously hasn't read a Batman comic. Here's how good and how fun a Batman comic could be from multi perspectives. Like year one or Dark Knight, it's like these work if you know this history or if you understand that this is an aspect of Batman, but
yeah.
all the aspects of Batman exist in Dark Knight. You've got the rogues, the detective skills, the fighting, the side characters. It's a little bit of everything, where Year One is only one part of him, and Legends of Dark Knight's only one part of him.
Side note, we talked about two Jeff Loeb stories. Long Halloween, the best. Avengers X Sanction, probably the worst.
Hey, no.
I don't know.
Potentially the worst.
I like how you totally just... Time out.
The worst.
Ultimate X.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait. Ultimatum. That's probably the worst.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wait. Ultimates 3.
Red Hulk
started good.
Was Ultimates 3 even a story? I mean, really.
It's not as much good as bad, though. It's really weird. Like, those color books are awesome. Like
Superman, yes. Batman, awesome, too.
Now, I never read it, but I know the Superman for All Seasons as well.
That's one of my favorite Superman stories.
Mine, too.
My favorite until All-Star Superman.
Actually, yeah.
I think
All-Star Superman, that would be a good one to give a new reader.
True. Very good.
Unless they wanted Batman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No, All-Star Batman and Robin might not be the best one to give him.
Superman will be
for
a teenage kid.
I don't know that I could ever recommend All-Star Batman and Robin to anyone.
What, are you retarded?
Oh, I could. You know what? No, I liked All-Star Batman and Robin.
Wait, who'd you call retarded?
That's one of the lines in All-Star Batman and Robin. You'd know that if you read
I've
any
read
books
it.
You bought.
I've read it. I've read that.
Matt, you should eat a rat.
The only thing I really remember that is on the
Batman.
Goddamn.
GD Batgirl. I'm a goddamn Batman.
That's awesome.
But then when Superman says it, everybody gets upset. So,
it's good duh.
Good duh.
Good
duh.
Hey, I'll say on Sunday, I sold Crossed Psychopath and Deadpool Max.
It's a Merry Christmas.
Yeah. That's like.
But I did kind of laugh only because you tweeted that and laugh and respond to you. But I laughed. I'm like, I don't have time to tweet every book I sell.
Well, no, but that was unusual.
Why don't you make that point of your point of sale? Like every time you
yeah, so but
it twitters.
Tom G just bought.
You know we laugh, but if someone could write a program to do that, you'd probably
be awesome. It would tweet the creator of the book.
I can do that. That wouldn't be hard. It'd be hard to tie it into the piece of junk you have. Stop.
After our discussion at the end of last week's podcast, I came in on Saturday and made it a point to pick up every oversized hardcover of Bendis' New Avengers run and Brubaker's Cap oversized omnibus.
Did you hear Nick?
No, what'd you say, Nick?
You said, what was the classic story? You know, to go back to last week, to all our listeners who were listening last week, I didn't even think of Dark Avengers only because of the way it ended in Siege. I felt it ended with such a balloon having the air let out of it that I didn't even think about the stories that went on before it.
But it's just part of his opus. I mean,
start strong.
The end of Bendis' run. So everything that we're seeing now is amping up to the end of Bendis' run. We thought it was
except
Siege,
Ultron.
Somebody waving.
Yes.
Hi.
We were just getting ready to jump in because this panel here so highly recommended Fly that I bought the first trade.
Okay.
And it sucked. So
okay.
I want to.
Then it what?
It sucked.
Well, I didn't read it, so I had nothing
to do
with
that.
What
was so bad about it?
Yeah, what didn't you like?
I just thought it was all very cliche, and I liked it up until the very end. Where the it's the back matter, the text, where the author talks about how the inspiration for the story, the escapist entertainment I just read, the thing that I was trying to, you know, enjoy myself with, was actually a reworked story of his wife's failed recovery from methamphetamine.
Yeah.
So talk about a bummer. And I'm just like, you know, I'm not saying that you can't tell those kind of stories in a comic forum, but the way the book is set up, it's not set up that way, you know.
Now, see, I did not have access to that because that was not back matter in the single issues. So I had no idea the history of
it
the
book. It definitely changes the...
It totally changed it. Like,
what'd you say, Nick?
Was the meth blue? Because I'm looking for this Heisenberg guy.
But, you know, the whole story is about, you know, forwards and back and that relationship that they had. You know, I don't want to spoil it in case anybody else wants to buy it. And
after that,
and,
wow, yeah, I'm going to stock it deep now.
And read the suckage, but...
Well, wait, I thought you said it was good until the history.
It was, because, like I said, because it was just a story. But then once I realized it was, like, real people and real wrecked lives and pain and the pain of the daughter that... I'm all worked up over it.
Settle down there, Sean.
Well, you know, Sean, comic people don't read pure text, so that's your fault. That's just there to fill the back of the book.
Don't tell that to James Robinson.
So, Adam, are you looking forward to anything for Christmas along the lines of Crossed or Walking Dead or...
Deadpool Max?
No, there's actually nothing. Last year, I know I'm jumping Christmases here, but last year I got all of, what was it? The Batman War, what is it?
War Games?
War Games, yeah. And I really like that book, that whole series. I just thought it was cool because, you know, they make Batman, they actually bring him out into the world. Take him out of that urban legend, and that's kind of where they did that. So it's one of those books that I just really love to read for that purpose.
My wife doesn't get me a lot of comic book stuff anymore because a year ago on my birthday she pretty much peaked and she bought me the Death of Jean Grey Dark Phoenix issue from Colin.
What?
But it was like that was like a holy grail book for me. Not so much that it's worth a lot, but it's hard to find because people don't tend to sell it.
I'm laughing because my wife was talking to my kids saying, you know, what should we get Daddy for Christmas? And my daughter says, well, he really wants that Amazing Fantasy book. Why don't you just get him that? So I'm like, I think that's a perfect idea.
Hey, if she gets one, can you
really
get another one?
Yeah, I really don't want to have to put a second...
How long did it take you to train her to say that?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't, but I thought that was so funny. I'm like, that's so sweet. But
yeah, it kind of backfired on me because, you know, my wife felt she did such a good job with the Death of Phoenix that I think she's like, I'm done.
What about the one before and the one after? It's a set. It's a 3-issue set now. Come on.
She's like, I've tapped out, you know, and you're on your own from here, buddy.
Yeah.
My wife had got me some really cool comics in the past, too. She got the first Barbara Gordon 1 year. I got the first Kingpin another year. But now she's too far away from what I have to know, like, what to get. So it's usually surprises. I did get some Converse Batman shoes, though.
So Christmas is ruined for you.
Well, huh? It's also funny for me.
I get my own stuff, basically.
Especially with the WB store when that was around.
That's so cool.
The whole family, it was great. It was so easy to shop for me. Just, you know, go there, get something, whatever. But now since I opened the store there, you know, well, he could get it if he wanted it. Crap. And, like, next week, the week after Christmas, my big Christmas present's coming. So I'm got happy about that.
What's that?
My gladiator statue from Bowen.
Nice.
Yeah.
I saw that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I only ordered one for me.
How big is it?
It's a Bowen, you know, 13? 15 inches.
Oh, not huge.
Not huge, not a sideshow, but
Gladiator's a cool character.
Didn't you say it completes like a set for you?
That was what yeah, I mean until they make Stiltman, but well no, actually I don't have a Bowen Electra. Yeah.
Is it a standalone statue or is it part of a diorama?
No, it's standalone.
Oh, okay, I thought.
Did you ever hear the Matt Fraction interview about killing Stiltman?
No.
What did he say?
He's like, you know, I finally get my big shot at Marvel, and my first thing is to shoot Stiltman in the taint with a rocket launcher.
Well, that can't be right. He brought Stiltman back in Punisher War Journal 1?
In 1 or 2, he shot
one of those
with
they
a rocket.
Killed him. Yeah.
He shoots, really?
Yeah, he shoots Stiltman with a rocket launcher right in the...
Yeah.
Was it the first real, like, the first Stiltman, or was it... I thought one of them died in Civil War.
I don't remember
that Punisher War Journal was launched out of Civil War.
Yeah, that was a fun issue, the wake of Stiltman, and then he blows up the bar. I enjoyed that. But, okay. I think we've kind of run our course tonight.
quality podcast.
I think this was a good one. So Merry Christmas, everybody. I'll get this up tonight, so everybody will have a chance.
Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and happy Festivus. Celebrate.
Keep your eye on the website for the new Festivus sales. It was funny. I had a guy call yesterday asking what the sale would be today. I'm like, come on. At 10 o'clock at night, I figured it out. There's not a whole lot of thought going into this.
The new Nick Fury from Battle Scars is going to say Merry Kwanzaa.
Yeah, that...
That's a rumor.
We were trying to keep this happy and positive, Nick. Way to ruin it.
That whole reveal did not make me happy.
Great time.
It's a rumor still. It's not.
Yeah.
It's a rumor. It's going to happen. But
it's bleeding.
Oh, my God.
Okay, the rumor, just so everybody, if it's not filled in, is the character in Battle Scars is going to be Nick Fury's son, and Nick Fury's going to be gone, and he'll be the new Nick Fury, just in time to go along with the Sam Jackson in the new Avengers.
Who is based on the Ultimates Nick Fury.
Right.
Wow.
Wait, how about this? They did say that Nick Fury is out of the potion that extends his life.
Right.
He gave the last batch to Bucky.
Yeah, after giving the last batch to Mockingbird. But
So wait, what if... Now he's going to age, and he's going to transfer his consciousness into Marcus Johnson.
See, you just took a bad idea and made
it worse. Yeah.
I just want to see Marcus fight some snakes on planes.
Yeah. Because that's what the internet wants. Back to our goodbyes. Happy holidays, and we'll talk at you next week. See ya.
See you on the webs.
It was all a dream. I used to read Wizard magazine, Marvel versus DC. I don't wanna fight no more, y'all. Check this out right here. I was raised in a small southern community. People used to look at me different because I looked different. But the song ain't about race, it's about lines in the sand that we draw to keep on producing any hatred. And internet culture only took away the faces for when we had to say negativity and cynicism took the world over. I rolled my bike and grabbed my backpack and hold it over my shoulder and went down to the comic book store with a copy of Me Against the World bumping. I spent my $10 and learned to love the elements that made me feel so relevant. A niche, a place to feel something. And I grew up thinking one side was better, and I ignored tradition thinking half the story could shepherd me through the gateways to seeing a world that lay beyond the racks that spun at the front next to the register. And all I hear is Marvel versus DC, and all I see is a sea of people like me, and all I feel is the hate in their voices, ignoring the choices life has given you and me. And all I hear is Marvel this and DC that, and all I see is a sea of people at my back. If you're trying to stop with all the naysaying, then Adam Warlock is here to keep the tape playing. I made fun of the big guns, the breasts, the muscle bearing chests, absurd jackets and outfits, each saga and death, the funerals and the time spent with secrets comic creators kept. I was a zombie walking around in a daze. I was a fan with crises on the way. And I still remember back when mom and dad would fight. I'd read a comic and sketch to pass the day. I'm feeling better now, life is slower now. And I see that I can love it for what these pages say. And sure, at times I'm frustrated, but great writing is dope. And sick ass art can be the saving grace. And that's whether it's Green Lantern or X-Men, Ghost Rider or Next Wave, the arranging I look through. So that's why when I rap, I try to talk about the things that bring us together the way that comic books do. And all I hear is Marvel versus DC. And all I see is a sea of people like me. And all I feel is the hate in their voices, ignoring the choices life has given you and me. And all I hear is Marvel this and DC that. And all I see is a sea of people at my back. If you're trying to stop with all the naysaying, then Adam Warlock is here to keep the tape playing.
That was a good drum break.
There ain't a thing that I can do about this black hole. We're all swimming in a dead pool of lost souls. Got more to chew on, sorta like a mind bender. A brainiac on the mic, that's why I stopped going back to the store. Cause the fans were like the walking dead. Just banshees screaming off all their talking heads. It's like they saw Spider-Man left like Batroc. Corporations face the price of shutting out the have-nots. And you can call them the Illuminati New World Order. Made a Franken castle like I told you.
So strange,
call a doctor, oh, dude, now they gotcha. Weak as Tony Stark when he's chilling out sober. I ain't no cat. No, I can't convince you, Mr. Sinister, in your minds I can't get into. But if you wanna be a Superman, show me. Stop with all the pointless battles like Don Quixote.